Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Welcome. I'm Ruthie Goodbow, your host of Third Thursdays with Ruthie, a fast-moving look at recent and hot topics in the world of labor relations and traditional labor law. I'm a shareholder with Ogletree Deacons and co-chair of its traditional labor practice. This episode will be of interest to employers with represented and unrepresented workforces alike. It goes to some of the basic tenets of the National Labor Relations Act. Specifically, we're going to focus today on Section 8C. And 8C is often referred to as the employer's free speech provision. It provides that an employer's communication with its employees shall not constitute or be evidence of an unfair labor practice as long as that communication, those communications, do not contain threats of reprisal, threats of force, or promises of benefits. This is the section that allows employers to express their views, arguments, or opinions about unions, unionization, and union representation. Importantly, and this will come into play later in our discussion today, those words, and they are in quotes, views, arguments, or opinions, is the exact language from the statute, and that's going to be important. For all of you who have been through a union organizing campaign, have an established union relationship, and frankly, anyone who has received any type of training related to unions and organizing, you'll remember these concepts and this premise through the mnemonic device that's often used, TIPS and FOE. FOE reminds us that employers may communicate facts, opinions, and experiences related to the union question, as long as that messaging doesn't involve threats, interrogation, promises, or surveillance, TIPS. So you have FOE, facts, opinions, and experiences, and TIPS, threats, interrogation, promises, or surveillance. While it's easy to teach TIPS and FOE, and probably pretty easy to understand the premise just as it's presented, the lines between facts and threats, opinions and promises, and even the line between facts and opinions are often blurred. A recent case decided by the DC Circuit Court highlights that tension that employers oftentimes feel when they're trying to effectively articulate their position on unions and simultaneously remain compliant under the law. So let's start back at the case when it was at the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. The case is Trinity Services Group, and it was decided by a three-member panel of Chairman McFerrin and members Ring and Kaplan. The facts of the particular allegation, which are of interest to us here today, are really very simple and were not disputed. So here's what happened. The union and the employer were in contract negotiations, which, as it turns out, included a proposal from the employer to change the then current PTO plan, which was contained in the collective bargaining agreement. The PTO plan in the CBA, which was applicable to the bargaining unit, that one facility, was different from the rest of the company and apparently very, very complicated and confusing. The phrase administratively challenging was used to describe it. While the negotiations were continuing, an employee raised an issue with her supervisor. The employee's paycheck showed she had 3 days of PTO available to use. The office manager, however, told the employee that according to the company's administrative records, which were kept in a software program, the employee had no PTO available. During the conversation, a supervisor made three statements that seemed to place blame on the union for the PTO issue, for the confusion. Just three statements, and these are those three statements. First, he said, "That is a problem the union created regarding PTO." He also said, you need to fix the problem with the union. And then when the employee commented that the employer really should ensure everyone received the correct PTO, the supervisor agreed and said, that's the problem with the union. That was it, those three statements. That's all that's involved in this case, this particular allegation and the DC Circuit case. So what do you think? Do those statements comply with TIPS info? I don't hear any threat, interrogation, or promise, definitely not surveillance in any of those three statements. And as the board said in its decision, it's well established that words of disparagement alone concerning a union or its officials is insufficient for finding a violation of the National Labor Relations Act. Even so, they admitted that there were no threats, no promises in these statements, the board upheld the ALJ's ruling and found that the ALJ had correctly decided that the statements, especially in the context of the conversation and in light of the contract negotiations, had a reasonable tendency to interfere with the employee's Section 7 rights by placing blame for the PTO problems on the union. In part, their decision was based on a Supreme Court case called Gissel. In that case, the Supreme Court distinguished statements of opinion that are protected under the Act from coercive overstatements that an employer has reason to believe will mislead employees. Citing other cases, the board made the point that by misrepresenting the union's position in a way that tends to cause employees to lose faith in the union constitutes a violation of the law. This interpretation draws focus to the F and the O in our faux mnemonic, facts and opinions, and draws focus on that blurred line between the two. So it boils down to this. Were these statements a lawful expression of the supervisor's personal opinion and therefore protected under Section 8C, or were they unlawful because they were misleading and caused employees or may have caused employees to lose faith in the union? Before you answer that, a bit more information to consider, because I think it's important to this analysis. It seems clear from the record that the employer, not the union, was responsible for the record-keeping error that was at the crux of the conversation and the cause of the supervisor's comments. On the other hand, however, it's also undisputed that the challenging PTO plan was the result of union representation and bargaining, since that particular plan and its corresponding problems didn't exist at the company's other non-union facilities because they weren't covered, weren't subject to the CBA. Now comes the DC Circuit. And this is interesting, in a very short, just 6-page decision, it reverses the board. And indulge me for just a minute as I read the first two paragraphs from the court's decision, because frankly, I think it sets the stage very well. These are the first two paragraphs in the DC Circuit opinion. This case began with a mix-up. In December 2017, the time card of an employee indicated that she had earned 3 days of paid leave. The company's records indicated otherwise. The truth? Less than clear. But the employee's boss thought he knew the source of the problem. Thanks to the union, the employee and her coworkers had a unique paid leave plan, different from the plan at the employer's other non-union facilities. Yet that meant headaches for the boss, since the parallel schemes were too much for the company's bookkeeping software. So when the employee's time card disagreed with his records, the supervisor pinned the blame on the union. I think that puts this whole issue in context and helps us understand why the circuit court decided as it did. So the circuit court found that the supervisor's statements were opinions, nothing more, because his remarks, assigning blame, offering advice, and putting the problem to the union, evoked no future consequences. As noted by the court, the board conceded this point and emphasized in its order that it was based solely on the supervisor's remarks. Instead, in the action for enforcement, the board urged the court to recognize an exception under 8C for misstatements involving no threats or promises. So the board was looking for the court to enforce their order, claiming that because it was a misstatement, it didn't get the protection of 8C. In the board's view, there's no safe harbor in that provision for materially false statements. And since it found it was patently false to blame the union for the administration of the PTO, the remarks violated the act. But the court rejected the idea of a misstatement rule because it doesn't exist in the statute and there is no precedent to support the concept. The only case the board cited in support of this misstatement rule was distinguishable. The remarks made in that case actually contained an implied promise. Actually, it was a promise of a better contract, which we all know is a violation. That's the P in TIPS. So as the court said, the short of it is the supervisor in the Trinity case expressed opinions. It didn't contain a threat, didn't contain a promise. So it's not unlawful. Now you may be thinking, there isn't anything earth-shaking or notable in these decisions. Why is Ruthie even talking about this? Well, when I read the case, there was a couple of things that made me think, hey, there are some really good reminders in here. First, the question of whether something is a fact or an opinion is not always so easily determined. The circumstances of this case illustrate that point. Was the confusion about the PTO a result of the company's software or the union's plan? To me, the answer depends on perspective. Regardless, it's a good lesson whether you are in a union organizing campaign or have an incumbent union to be very mindful of the words you speak and the context in which they're spoken. Second, while the DC Circuit Court did find that this misstatement without more, no threats, no promises, wasn't a violation, it doesn't mean that anything goes. And it gave the following example. What would happen if a supervisor told workers the union had canceled an election, duping employees into missing an important vote? As the court noted, even though there are no threats or promises in those statements, the board would have to determine whether those remarks in and of themselves represent the expression of, and remember I said this at the beginning, and this is in quotes, views, arguments, or opinion that is protected by Section 8C. My opinion, I think that these kinds of statements would be seen, you know, duping employees into missing an election. Those statements don't contain threats or promises. We can all see that. But I think most of us would agree that they certainly interfere with an employee's Section 7 rights. And so whether or not the board would find they are not views, argument, or opinion, it is highly likely the board would find that kind of conduct and behavior to violate the law. So there you have it. Nothing incredibly different in this decision, but it does, though, emphasize the basics and the importance of integrating these concepts into our training and into our thinking regularly, and of course, into our practice. As Michael Jordan once said, get the fundamentals down and the level of everything you do will rise. Thanks so much for joining us. Hope to see you next month for our July episode. Happy summer.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.